Welcome to the PWI Live Recruiting Show. A lot of non-recruiting things we're going to be talking about today. Because breaking news, there are new renderings of Beaver Stadium and what the proposal for the stadium is. It's a good day for that. I drank an entire pot of coffee, guys. I can feel my frontal lobe banging on my skull today with as much coffee as I've had. So let's get into all the information and we'll dissect all of it, talk about all of it, and get to look at pretty pictures, which I think is my favorite thing. Like I'm a shiny object sort of person. So we get to give you the shiny objects as they just came out exactly 4 minutes ago from Penn State. Before we get to that, though, of course, got to introduce the guests. Everyone's got to say hi. Ryan Snyder, Sean Fitz, our recruiting insiders. We will be getting to recruiting stuff later in the show today that crosses over with running back searches, official visits, all that stuff. So yeah. It's February. It's a dead period, but there's so many things to talk about. Fitz, welcome to the show. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great. We've got renderings, which everyone has been clamoring for the longest time with Beaver Stadium. They look really, really good. I mean, they're renderings. They should look really good. But Beaver Stadium's new stuff is out. It's pretty cool, and I'm not sure how much we'll get into the actual details. I know Nate's been tracking this one, and definitely head over to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com for more on what to expect with Beaver Stadium, not just this year, but beyond that. It's a cool situation, man. I never really thought about this when I got into the business about just watching a stadium. They call it a revitalization, but, you know, just kind of tear down and build it back up. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we'll be getting, we'll have a breaking news video, air quotes breaking news, later today once Nate is able to join me here on the Blue White Illustrator YouTube channel. So we're going to do an initial salvo here, and then we're going to do a follow-up with some more of the details from our big picture guy, Nate Bauer. The details dude, the guy who gets into the trenches and talks to recruits and calls parents and chases people down in dark alleys to get Penn State recruiting information, Ryan Snyder. Ryan, how you doing today?
Doing well, man. I'm reading about this now. Guys, 135 new wireless access points. Heyo. Maybe you'll be able to use your phone. Sweet.
I'm sure they'll work flawlessly as they always do.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we were told that before. But I'm reading over these details now. Pretty cool stuff here. It says that next year, you know, obviously next year is going to be temporary seating on the west side, but it says that they expect to still be over 100,000 throughout the 2025 season, which is good. No parking impacts, it looks like, which is always good to hear. I'm just trying to take this all in at the moment and learn about it myself, but. Pretty pictures, like you said, T. Frank, right? Pretty pictures. You're a picture guy.
This is unrecognizable. I don't even know where this is supposed to be in Beaver Stadium. These Skyler family clubs.
They'll all be the West End. Everything will be the West End.
Those are places you're not allowed to go to, T. Frank. So
that's what I thought. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Although I will at some point find my way in here on an off day for sure, just because I like this stuff. Personally, like one of the things, it's weird. My YouTube algorithm is the worst because it's just ADHD focused music, so I can work during the day, and then time lapse videos of people building stuff like. This is super interesting to me. So, looking at some of these things, the parts that people are going to see here are the concourses, right? So these main concourses, again, almost unrecognizable to what it is right now in Beaver Stadium in terms of the layout of what things look like. This is the main concourse, I believe, on the main level. Some of this stuff does look at least a little bit familiar from a structure standpoint, but there's going to be obviously major revitalization for the fan experience. And of course, here's what fans want to see, which is the bowl, the picture of the bowl, as you can see here. As you guys have just any thoughts here quickly as we get through the last of these pictures of what all of this is going to look like, any initial thoughts from viewing these renderings and what you guys have read in the last 5 minutes?
I mean, they're not trying to scale down. Like we thought at some point it was going to be like a pro stadium where every seat is, you know, just the fold out seats. But it looks like they're hanging in there in terms of attendance numbers, possibly expanding that capacity. Don't know that it necessarily means more seats, but added capacity with different standing rooms and different concourse, all that kind of stuff where you can sort of get around those numbers. So Penn State not backing down on from Michigan, essentially. Let's be honest here. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about potentially building the largest stadium capacity per capacity in the country. So that's pretty cool. I'm not an audio scientist or anything like that. It looks loud. Like it looks like it would keep things in. It looks very similar to what Kyle Field looks like after the rebuild there. And I think that's probably kind of the blueprint for what you're looking for. So many tiers, more concourses, more spot space to look around. I even saw at some point some of the upper levels seating will have more leg room, which I'll believe it when I see it. But, you know, it's pretty massive undertaking here by Penn State.
Yeah, wanting to have all of it, which is a very modern Penn State football view of things, which is, yeah, we're not going to decrease capacity and we're going to increase fan experience and we're going to add more amenities and we'll see
no,
how.
And sorry, Steven, there's no money left for bathroom doors. You're out of luck there.
Yeah, I haven't even checked the chat in terms of what's going on here.
I hope they keep at least one trough somewhere in the stadium, like for, you know, old time's sake. I'm just kidding.
Well, like a Pittsburgh toilet, like out in the public, just as like a thing that's like there for everyone to see is the history, or is it more of like you just want to be able to use one somewhere?
The troughs are with the statues now. I'm sorry.
Anyway, let's talk about the Penn State running back coach search update, because this is the show where we'll talk about the impact on recruiting. I apologize. I have not been able to keep up with if there's been any new updates to what we've been reporting. Not that I want to get into the nitty gritty details here, Fitz, but BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, that's where you go to find that information. Is there anything that you want? Wrong one there. If there's anything you want to promote for the site to tell people about over there about this, you know, this coaching search that is currently ongoing.
Second hot board went up yesterday. Definitely check that out. I think the James Franklin talked about it on Tuesday. It was, I believe, when he was outlining Sider's departure and how they're going to fill it. He said smaller list than you would think, looking at potential connections there to the Northeast and the Big Ten country, the footprint and things like that. And there's a bunch of guys that make sense. So check out that hot list. I know it was come up that DeMarco Murray was linked to the job. That was actually reported by Pete Nikos on three. Didn't really see that one happening. But his name is a big name. So like Ohio State went after him last year. Oklahoma was able to get him back. Penn State, he was on the list for Penn State to talk about, but I don't think he's the top guy. So I continue to look at Stan Drayton, former Temple head coach, former Texas assistant, Ohio State assistant, one of the most respected running back coaches in the country. I think he's a legitimate option. I think he's the name that's probably come up more than anything. And if Penn State lands him, that'd be a pretty massive move for Penn State. And of course, he's not employed right now, so it kind of helps things, and the timing seems right. As far as the timeline goes, Ryan, you know that they're in a dead period right now. So yes, you do want to recruit, but you can't host anybody. You can't go see anybody. So the impetus to get it done is not necessarily like yesterday. You know, you gotta vet your guys, take your time, interview a bunch of guys. James Franklin always does this, interviews a bunch of guys that probably aren't even going to be in the mix for the job really, but like they're younger guys that are coming up and it's good experience for them. He went through it as a young assistant, going through and doing all these interviews. So I think you'll, you know, there's a bunch of names on that list to check out and to sort of comb through and see what makes sense.
What's the balance there though, of having to get a guy in quickly because it's the middle of February and you've got about a month until spring football? Is that necessarily important, or getting the right guy is the most important thing, but I guess, is there at least an emphasis on a push of, okay, we need to get this settled now because the time is getting shorter the longer the offseason runs?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's like any other coaching search. It's like you've always wanted to get it done as soon as possible, but it's got to be the right guy. I don't think, you know, we sit here and go from hour to hour, from day to day covering the thing, and everybody's sort of like there was somebody yesterday who was like, can this get done already? And it's been, what, 3 days, 3.5 days since Sider was leaving for Notre Dame. So like, it's not a long coaching search at all. But it feels like it at the time. So probably feels like that in the building, especially for those running backs. Those running backs, a couple of them came out this week and said, hey, it's just business as usual. Quentin Martin and Corey Smith were, you know, just kind of like, oh, I was surprised, but you know, you move on and you go with it. So you look at what they have to accomplish in the next couple of weeks. And I think you got time, because actually spring practice doesn't start till late March this year with the Blue White game being in late April. So you got plenty of time. I don't see a situation where you like absolutely need to put pen to paper, but you want to make sure those things go through. Actually, Jawan hasn't even been announced by Notre Dame yet. So that's
right.
I was going to say,
it's not interesting to me, but it's just like, I would have expected that to happen by now.
And to, I know it's a little bit different, but Deion Barnes was part of the coaching search, and I think they announced him during camp at that point. I know he's already on the staff, but he was announced pretty late in the process as well. So it's not new territory for Penn State at this point.
Yeah, there's no right. there's no prototype here. Like, there's no like this has to be done by this. You look at how long, you know, and it's about when guys can make it work. Like, if it is Drayton, he's not employed, so that gives you a lot of flexibility. If it is somebody else that, you know, is employed, not so much there. And actually, James talked about that this week. He said there's guys that have signed contracts and have bigger buyouts and things like that. And I think that's pertinent. We talked about that on the big board, but it's definitely an interesting time to switch, because usually when you're switching right now, you're switching. Or usually when there's a coaching change right now, it's an NFL job. Like, you look at all the different college assistants that have been plucked to the NFL in the last week. Penn State's been able to avoid that. But at the same time, that's kind of what you're thinking about. So it's just a little bit different from the spin of it all.
Ryan, the part that relates to this show is Messiah Mickens and the primarily Messiah Mickens, but also recruiting and the work that Jaywon Sider had done over the, you know, his time here at Penn State, having commits all the way out into 27 and having offers, I think, out into 28. So you had a chance to speak to Messiah Mickens. What was your takeaway from that conversation?
That he needs to meet the new coach. I mean, that was his primary point, at least. But I think there's a couple of things that stand out. Obviously, Messiah has been committed for 17 months now. He's been considered, I think, one of the leaders in the class. He's a pretty charismatic guy. You know, he certainly, I'm not going to say he's doing a ton of peer recruiting, but he has good enough relationships with a bunch of guys that he's certainly helped in some ways. You know, as far as moving forward, it's certainly about his relationship with that coach and whoever it may be. I think that's a big part of it. I'll also point back to a couple key milestones that stand out to me. One, Elias Koch going to Rutgers. And then 2 weeks later, him putting out a graphic about being locked in with Penn State, when I think from the outside looking in, it looked kind of silly as to why that graphic is being put out there. But I think if you just – this is me speculating more than anything. I don't really have true inside info on it. But I do wonder a little bit about Elias going to Rutgers and maybe some things that he learned about maybe, I don't know, the market or what schools are trying to provide guys, because – I think it's pretty, we've discussed it enough now, and we discussed on the pod too, that, you know, Rutgers came after him with a heavy or somewhat aggressive NIL offer. I don't know exactly what it was that, and, you know, Penn State wasn't really to match it. That's interesting to me, just to see then that graphic about him being locked in a couple of weeks later. I'm curious to see, or curious to learn maybe what happened in those 2 weeks, you know, but also it's no secret that he visited South Carolina before. Lex Cyrus, of course, is committed to South Carolina. So I think that's curious to me as well. He admitted that at least 6 to 8 schools have already contacted him. So where I'm going with this is, I think meeting the new coach and all that is very important. And do I think that Messiah Mickens is actively looking for a reason to leave Penn State? No, I don't. I wrote that on the board a couple times yesterday. But I do wonder if he's a little curious about two things. One, you know, he's never really gone out and visited a ton of other schools because he committed so early. You know, is there, you know, a little bit of a scratch or an itch to go see some of these schools, especially considering now that he has this window open, and, you know, I don't think fans and others can get really mad at him for doing that after Sider left. I think that's kind
You'd
of
be surprised.
Cover for him. Well, yeah, I'm sure some will, but in my eyes,
anybody it's reasonable.
Right. Yeah. So that I wonder about that a little bit. And then I also, again, I'll come back to Koch. And we know Rutgers won aggressively after him. A lot of things have also changed in the NIL market over the last year and a half. You know, is there a little bit of part of him that's kind of curious to learn maybe what his market value would be or things like that? So, again, I'm going to stress that those are all just me thinking out loud. That's nothing that, you know, I've heard from Penn State sources or Messiah or anybody close to Harrisburg. But I also think, just knowing how things have changed over the last 16 months and 17 months, and then also looking at the timeline of some of these events, it wouldn't shock me if there's a little bit of part of that as well. So let's see who the new coach is first and foremost. I think that's he's got to figure that out. But when you have all these prospects, especially top guys, and he's considered a top guy, setting up these OVs and all that, you know, I do wonder if there's a little bit of him that's curious and you know, maybe wants to take some of those visits because he never really did.
There's a push and pull here of I'm not trying to catastrophize. I'm just contingency of the situation. There are a couple of ways it could unfold. And I said this yesterday, no matter what, you have two running backs that are done next year in Catron Allen. Catron Allen and Nick Singleton. And so there's going to be a competition for those jobs in 2026. Do the guys that are in the room make it there now? You know, the young guys who are kind of pushing on that ceiling of maybe they wanted to play, maybe they wanted to be a part of it. At the end of spring football, if they don't feel like Penn State's going to run 23 and they're not going to have, depth in the rotation and it's just going to be the same as it was last year, is there a concern that you could be in a position like they were a couple of years ago where suddenly you thought you had a lot of talent in the room? And now in 2026, there's less if a guy like Mickens moves on and decides to maybe follow Sider to Notre Dame or explore these other options and guys transfer now. Fitz, I'm not trying to catastrophize, but these are different scenarios that could play out. Likelihood there that you think that that's a possibility. And I guess, how do you view kind of the paths that could be going forward?
Well, they've got 7 scholarship running backs for 2025. That's a lot right now. You didn't necessarily expect Nick and or Catron to come back for 2025. So we were looking at that open competition for this spring, and you're looking at the guys coming back. Of course, Cam Wallace coming off of a gruesome injury, Quentin Martin, Corey Smith, and then Tyke Hayes, who's done some really nice things so far, like those four in spring, and then Jabri Wallace Coleman joins them in the summer. So that's a lot of backs to begin with. So I'm looking at the first hurdle being the end of spring ball. Like, if a guy comes in and you don't fit into plans, if you're one of those younger guys in the lot, maybe you do look around. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily be the most surprising thing, and not certainly unprecedented. So you're looking at that, and then you get to the season, and the season's got to play out, in my mind at least, where you get multiple guys' touches to preserve those guys for the stretch run because you think you're going to be a playoff team again, and then sort of go from there. So I don't think Mickens plays into this all that much. Okay. I don't foresee a situation. The last time they did this was because Nick and Catron came in as freshmen and went gangbusters on everybody else. And everybody was like, right, well, I'm gonna play, so I might as well leave. I don't see that as the scenario. I see, some things change with those two coming back for their senior years. Yes. But I don't see a situation where all of a sudden it clears out, because it cleared out from an eligibility standpoint. It cleared out ahead of them. Now it's going to have to clear out behind them. And if it clears out behind them, you can backfill. And, you still probably take two running backs in 2026, including Messiah Mickens. And, we'll see if this thing blows over, if there's more to it. I do think he'll check out other schools, as Ryan said, just because he committed so early, didn't really go through the process. And that's part of the process now. So I'm not looking at a situation where this room completely falls apart unless they mega botch the hire, which I don't expect to happen.
Yeah. And again, I want to make this clear, not trying to catastrophize and create a problem where there isn't. But there is this change coming. Disruption happens, and there are opportunities for what people expect, because everyone in chat already has their lineage of which quarterback is going to start next, which running back is going to be the next one that starts for Penn State, who's the next guy going to the draft. Disruption is coming, I guess, is basically what I'm trying to say, because the stability they've had for so long has been a bit of a bottleneck in terms of they've gotten a lot of talent in, but some of these guys, as you mentioned, there's 7 of them in the room right now. There aren't going to be 7 of them in perpetuity. We got to get to today's sponsor, and that is, of course, My Imperfect Franchise, Andy Ludeke. He is the sponsor here on the BWI Live Recruiting Show for quite a long time now. Appreciate his continued support of what we do, because he is a super fan of college football and college football recruiting. So he is just like you on that front. And if you are just like him, somebody who lived in corporate management for a while but was making money for other people, and you wanted to stretch your legs and test your abilities and own your own franchise, own your own business, he can help you do that. Andy at MyPerfectFranchise.net, he is a franchise consultant. He went through that process of buying a franchise. He had a franchise consultant help him, and he wants to pass that knowledge on to you in a service that's 100% free to you and helps you find the right business to manage, because things are being disrupted at all points and all times in business. The landscape keeps changing, from government changing to AI and everything else. So finding the right thing to manage is absolutely the number one thing he's concerned about, finding the right business to put you in if you are the right candidate as well. So check him out, 404-973-9901, Andy at MyPerfectFranchise.net. And the cool thing is, he wants to donate to NIL. He wants to be a part of the college football and college sports process, and specifically baseball. He's a huge baseball fan. Of course, he's from Texas. So baseball a little bit different in Texas than in Pennsylvania for Penn State. But if anyone from the Blue White Illustrated ecosphere buys a franchise from him, he is going to donate to the NIL collective of that school. You know, he works with a bunch of different On3 companies. And if so, if you are somebody who has joined from Blue White Illustrated, who we've had people do that already, he is willing to donate to the NIL collective in for the baseball team to help further that, because he's a huge baseball fan. So all kinds of great stuff for you. Check him out again, Andy at myperfectfranchise.net. Of course, it's not all about running backs, because Penn State has a bunch of other positions they're recruiting in 2026. And Ryan, new RPM pick for you and somebody
Fitz.
Else.
And John, well, John okay, well,
okay, Fitz, you put it in. I apologize.
They're catastrophizing.
All right, I'm just gonna like stop. What are we talking about here? Who's
you
the
drank
latest?
Too much coffee today, dude? You were me like the
yeah,
last
you are
month
wired yeah. today, man.
Yeah. Right. So who are we talking about today?
We're talking about Matthew Kanu, linebacker from Patriot High School in Virginia. This is a kid that Penn State has had on campus several times, and it's notable to me. So his first visit, at least the first visit that we were aware of, was for the whiteout. He came up. He did not have an offer. He had an offer a couple of days later. They came and they saw him. He's about 6'3", 220. He's built pretty well. He's a box linebacker all the way. But he came up. He saw the game, loved the game, then picked up the offer, then came back. And then he came back again in January 20th, the first junior day he was up. So he just keeps coming back, and he's got an official visit set up to Penn State for the summer. He's also got an official visit set up for Virginia Tech for the summer. Michigan has offered. Notre Dame snooping around as well. But Penn State, I think, has made a really positive impression. He said Penn State was the clear leader coming out of his visit. So not too much, not leaving too much to the imagination via his words, but his actions are really what get my attention. You look at Penn State's linebacker situation right now, taking two or three probably in the current class of 2026, and Kanu fits a lot of ways. Reminds me a little bit Jesse Luchetta. He looks like one of those Mike/edge guys, always moving forward, doing things that are productive to get to the quarterback, to get to the ball carrier. And he arrives quickly, and he hits pretty hard. So he's fun. He's a fun little tape to watch. So he's unrated right now, which Ryan has been beating this drum for the last couple of weeks. What's that?
I'm sorry, I was laughing. Yes, go ahead.
So we haven't done 2026 rankings since October. So if you're leaning into these things and he's unrated or this guy is this, just have some patience. These guys are going to get rated. When Matthew Kanu gets rated, he's going to be rated, I don't know, probably high three, low four, something in there. Mm-hmm. He's a really, really good football player. We don't have a ton of information on him athletically in terms of testing numbers and things like that, but he's got some pretty darn good tape. So I put in my pick for Penn State. Like I said, he says they're the leader. We think that they're the leader, just going out on a limb there. But it'll be interesting to watch how far this one gets, because he does have that official visit set up, or a couple of officials set up for the summer. But also, new schools could come in the spring and offer him and get him a chance to visit those other programs. So, but I like where Penn State is right now with Matthew Kanu.
I'm interested in the film, and we can talk about it in a little bit. But Ryan, anything you want to add there?
Totally agree. I mean, again, as Sean said, we're really going out of a limb there. It's not often today, at least in 2024, 2025, that you get guys outright saying they're the leader. Eventually they do, when you get towards the end, and maybe he knows, maybe he is a little bit closer to the end than we realize. But after that January 25th junior day, he flat out said Penn State is still the clear leader after today. I like everything they stand for, from education to the training staff to nutrition. Also, the scheme they run is very similar to what my team does. So this is one that Penn State should be able to win. He's also picking up some more quality offers that I see. Michigan offered Nick Abrams yesterday, I think it was.
Michigan offered him a couple weeks ago, I believe. Kanu.
Oh, Kanu. Okay, yeah, I thought they offered. I saw a Wisconsin offer as well somewhat recently. Let's see where all he's able to visit, because he hasn't been able to go to too many schools. I believe he went to West Virginia the week after Penn State. He's been to Vautech a couple times as well. So wouldn't shock me if West Virginia got an official visit, because he's been there a couple times. Obviously, this most recent one was the first under Rich Rod's tenure there, which, by the way, I saw they hired Pat White yesterday, which was which was cool to see.
Oh wow!
Because I think they have Noel Devine on that staff too, which I have a couple of West Virginia fans. They're all excited about that. But yeah, this is a recruitment Penn State should be able to win. Let's see where things progress. Wouldn't be shocked if you did go check out Wisconsin or Michigan. There's some other quality offers there as well. But as long as Penn State's able to get him back in the spring, I honestly personally wouldn't be shocked if he didn't last until official visits with what, 4 some months to go. I do think Penn State's the clear-cut favorite, and they should get him back in the spring. But, you know, for now, all these guys are setting up official visits. Probably only 70% of them will actually use them, but we'll see what happens.
I'm curious, Fitz, how do you feel about the hybrid Mike linebacker / edge rusher sort of pipeline that Penn State has, in the sense that there have been times, and I think we're in one of those times right now, where Penn State recruits a lot of these guys that, you know, are big enough that they could maybe play on the line of scrimmage and maybe play in the box, and suddenly you don't have a guy that you feel comfortable in coverage, you know, playing that Mike linebacker position. That's obvious, I should say. And part of that obviously is development and certain guys not maybe being on the track that you would hope them to be. But when you have a guy like Matthew Canoe, who is so big and is a part of this, does it leave you vulnerable to not having pieces that you want? And the Jim Knowles defense, I that's a whole thing I'm still trying to work through in my mind of what skills and qualities they're looking for in linebackers, which I think is slightly different maybe than it was previously. But I guess, how do you view that Jesse Luketta comparison that you made just a few minutes ago?
Yeah, I mean, my question with him, with Canoe, the player, or at least on his highlights, is what does he do in coverage? Because there's a lot of downhill going forward type stuff, and he's really, really good at it. But, you know, how much is he asked to drop into coverage? How proficient is he at coverage? I don't know. With this new defense, everything's being hybridized, right? You're taking a look at meshing that assembly line that we talk about from position to position. And yeah, it makes sense to me. With a guy like Canoe, it's more about nature. Like, how big is he going to get? And he doesn't necessarily have the length of a Zariah Fisher, who was this guy, you know, but Zariah's got 34 and a half inch arms, something like that. He's definitely like a defensive end length guy. I don't know that Canoe is that guy, but you look at the jack position, you look at the different positions where you consider that sort of not a true defensive end, but a hybrid type thing. And it makes sense from that standpoint. And Jesse was really good at that. Jesse's not the longest guy out there, but really good at moving forward and getting, you know, he didn't have the gaudy stats. He had somebody on the other side that was pretty good getting those, but the versatility for him to move around. You remember the outback bowl when he went back and played middle linebacker? Like, that is kind of what I'm looking at here as a guy that's, you just drop him in and he can play the position. It's not necessarily about being a star, but it's being about proficient at the position. And I think he's able to do something like that.
Yeah. The thing I'm curious about is there a true shift towards guys that are bigger anyway, because of the way that Jim Knowles has played his defense? Like, it does not look the same when there are three linebackers on the field. They base out of a four down front, and they do have packages. It's even about the same amount of time that there are three linebackers on the field. But having watched it over time, this is a nickel defense. It operates best that way. You get the true full effect. And so, I mean, if you've got only six true linebackers on the field at a time, do you need those guys necessarily to be bigger? You know, and I know that it's Ohio State, but you look at the linebackers that they had last year, those are some big dudes. You know, they played with a certain presence that was comparable to their size. And Penn State has been about attacking, you know, penetration, getting into the backfield. From what I've seen, this is more about control, being in the gap, making sure that maybe you don't get the TFL, but you stop the running back every time for 2 or 3 yards. That looks more like what Canoe does, as opposed to a guy like Dom DeLuca. And so, is there a shift coming? And again, these aren't answers that you know. These aren't answers that I think they're still working through. But these are the questions. These are the processes in my mind that are going through when I'm watching film of linebackers now. Guy like Alex Tash, no question, I think he fits. Canoe, I'm still not sure in terms of where in the defense.
I mean, you're playing the crop here. You're feeding on what you can grow in your area. Like, basically, you're not looking at a different fundamental shift to a bigger guy. And that's kind of the thing with Ohio State, and, you know, Alabama did in the past. Yes, they had 260-pound linebackers, but those guys also ran 4.5. Like, those, you know, those are not easy guys to find. So I think it's about what's around and making that fit. You look at Penn State's linebacker group this year, and they're all shapes and sizes. I mean, there's some really long, you know, guys that can really run. You know, LeVar Arrington just came into the program. He looks different than, you know, Kobe King did last year, or Anthony Speca does, you know. So you've got different body types and different things like that. So you kind of got to go with what you've got at this tier.
Yeah. And so Mech Engineer says, Keon Wiley too small for Mike. Here's the thing, is like size, weight is only part of this conversation. And Fitz made a great point that if you're fast and big, of course you're going to play and you're going to be good. If you're a guy who used to play defensive end and you know how to take on blocks and destroy blocks, that's size. That is the occupation of space, as opposed to, you know, you are 225 pounds and you're getting pushed around. There's just different ways to win in football. So I don't want to make it all about size. I just want to bring it up that I think it might, I'm eyeballing, is there a transition? And this is just the first time I wanted to bring it up.
But
I don't know if it's...
But Frank, playing off of that, where does the mic line up for Penn State? Does he line up on the ass, or excuse me, on the butt of the one technique, like we're thinking?
No, sorry. No, right.
Yeah. You move, like, these are two box linebackers. So if the mic is 5 pounds less than the will, does it matter?
No, not from a job description perspective. You would want both of them to be 240. And it's like, you don't want 260-pound linebackers. You want guys that can cover, but you want them to be big enough when they take on guards and they take on or fullbacks, you know, or H-backs or whatever, that they are winning more of those than they are losing. But again, you were hoping for that in Penn State's defense anyway. You were just emphasizing the speed to beat them in a certain way. And again, these are all, James Franklin talked about how they're meshing the defense with what they did and what Jim Knowles has done in the past. That whole conversation, none of this is decided. So I'm just, we're now spinning our wheels, and that's entirely on the coffee. Nope. Wrong one here. We were going over to Ryan. You spoke with the Waffles about a bunch of different things. And I wanted to get your perspective on both of these situations, with Owen Waffle joining the program as a defensive tackle, and of course, Luke Waffle being a really, really good looking prospect in 2026. The article, you should go check it out at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, about Owen coming to Penn State, was a couple of weeks ago. But what was your takeaway from the conversation with their dad about generally the relationship with Penn State?
Proud of you for not saying waffle, T. Frank. It's still really easy to do. I see a lot of people still doing that. We're going to keep pushing waffle just because of the Waffle House jokes, and I like to mess them up for everybody. Owen, so yeah, I mean, we'll start with Owen. Look, I mean, I think looking back, there's a lot of things about his recruitment that were interesting, especially the more I've learned about it. Committing to Notre Dame when he did had a big impact, I think, on Penn State's pursuit of him originally, especially when you add in the fact that John Scott left, you know, about a year after he committed to Notre Dame. And even when he did leave, there was a little bit of an open period there where maybe Penn State could have gotten the mix. And if they would have, I think they would have actually had a real shot at it. But Deion Barnes, of course, takes that job. Was it March or May? Was it May when Deion took over? Do you remember, Sean? Either
March.
Way. I can't remember.
Because it was hanging through all of spring break. It was all of spring break where there was no announcement, and then they announced it during, I think, the first day of spring practice.
Yeah. Long story short, he ends up going to Michigan then after an official visit in June 2023. And then, of course, everybody that he commits to at Michigan ends up leaving. You know, obviously Harbaugh wants to San Diego or San Diego. Now I did it. Chargers, LA. And then, of course, you know, he took the D-line coach and the defensive coordinator with him. You know, Owen trying to be loyal to his school and all that, gives it a year there, but it just wasn't working out. And you know, so he enters the portal. Oklahoma, basically learned Oklahoma was the school that Penn State had to beat out, and it really came down to the scheme, I think. And we see defensive ends and defensive tackles talk all the time about Penn State's vertical scheme and how it really, at the end of the day, it comes down to athleticism and doing your job there more than being asked to do a bunch of kind of more complicated, is not the right word, but yeah, well,
doing a lot of just, dirty
it's,
work.
It's a simpler system. And I think a lot of guys like that, you know, David Waffle, that's their father's name. He was a defensive lineman at Duke. And, you know, he talked about how they were going into some of these official visits at other schools and just, you know, talk about his head spinning just because they're he thought that a lot of these schools are just kind of overcomplicating things. So I think when you add in the fact that they really like Barnes then as a person as well, and, you know, Penn State's having a lot of success, and obviously it's somewhat close to home. It's a Big Ten school. Excuse me. That all kind of made sense. I think another big reason that it made sense is the fact that Deion Barnes has made Luke, his younger brother and a 2026 prospect at the on school, one of his top priorities. You know, he offered Luke just over a year ago in January 2024. And Luke's really become one of, like I said, one of Deion's top edge rushers. So because of that relationship and because of they've been, you know, aggressively pursuing Luke, they had a really good understanding of what Deion's all about, what Penn State's all about. And that kind of gave them a little bit of an edge, I thought, just from talking to his dad. Sorry, guys, I got something in my throat. You know, when it comes to really understanding what Penn State could provide Owen as well. So I think the big takeaways that when we transfer over to Luke is that having Owen there does help. And that's easy to think about. It's easy to assume. But that's not always the case for brothers or even, you know, good teammates, whatever it may be. But, you know, his father was very outright outspoken about, yes, they want to play together. They only got to play together one season at the Hun school. And Luke and Owen both really enjoyed that experience, and they've since talked about that. So I do think it will be a factor in Luke's recruitment. I also think that Tennessee and Texas are two schools to really look for, especially Texas. Texas has been incredibly aggressive from an NIL perspective, and he is important to Texas from what I've been able to gather. He's going to go back to Texas and Tennessee, and I assume Penn State and some others in the spring. I know he has an official visits, or he's in the process of lining up official visits. Penn State will be one of them. But Texas and Tennessee seem like the two schools to really keep an eye on the most. Obviously, he's visited Michigan a ton. I can't remember the last time I saw an older brother or even a close friend transfer out of a school and then that person go to the same school. I'm not saying Michigan's completely out of it, but it would surprise me.
At least.
It would surprise me, especially when it's a brother and it's family related. I can't really see Luke going to Michigan now, but time will tell. You know, and then we'll see with some other schools as well. But to me, this is about Tennessee and Texas. And are they able to maybe beat out Penn State in the end? That's what I think it will come down to. He did mention Ohio State has stepped up interest a little bit. So let's keep an eye on the Buckeyes. I don't believe Luke has at least visited Ohio State before. North Carolina did offer as well somewhat recently. Bill Belichick came to his school. So, you know, whenever you get the Bill Belichick offer, at least a lot of guys have been excited about that recently. So wouldn't be shocked if he goes down to Chapel Hill. But to me, actually, he does already have a visit set to Chapel Hill. He's going to go to the Duke game, which who wouldn't want to go to a UNC Duke game for basketball? I think he said that's March 8th. So let's see where things go. But to me, this is Penn State's to lose. Tennessee and Texas are the two that I think will ultimately become the true competitors for that commitment.
Fitz, what do you think of the situation? I want to start with Owen, who there's a little bit less, I think, understanding of because of the, you know, didn't play last year at Penn or at Michigan. And, you know, his recruitment is so far in the rearview mirror that maybe people have forgotten. Where do you think he fits in the roster this year in terms of ability to help or development, or how do you view him as a transfer in a room that there's opportunity?
First thing that caught my attention in those Wayful highlights was a team ran a flea flicker at the high school level, not successfully at all, surprisingly. That was very funny to watch. Owen Wayful came in. He impressed in terms of athletic ability. He spent a year in the weight program at Michigan. I think you can probably tell that. As opposed to some of the guys that they brought in last year at Penn State, where, you know, you just kind of get a fresh start. So when you get a guy that's been in a weight program like that, you notice the difference. And he came in, tested pretty well. And so there's some encouragement there. I think you probably, you know, you traded up. T.A. Cunningham was out. He came in. So athletically, sort of potentially, you traded up there. So that's a good thing for Penn State. It's so tough to look at this freshman class of defensive tackles and say, where do they fit in? Everybody wants Liam Andrews to break through. Well, he's just getting back into the mix of things. So Andrews, Gilliam, DeAndre Cook, and now Wayful are those guys that are in there. So kind of varying degrees of development there. I think Gilliam's probably your number one. Well, your number one out of that group right now. Andrew's a complete wild card. DeAndre Cook's done some nice things, but I still think he's probably needs another year or two to marinate.
He's a bit
there.
Of a project too. Like that was an understanding thing where he had a lot.
They're all projects, but that's the position. Like when you bring in a defensive tackle, very rarely. I think was PJ the last one to play as a true freshman for Penn State regularly.
Zane.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you Zane. Just to burn that red shirt. So it's but that just tells you right there what it takes to be a true freshman that can contribute. So you got those guys in there. Cook will need a little bit more time. I think Waif will take some time this year, and then maybe next year is where you're looking at. But I haven't seen him play, so I don't want to sell him short or anything like that. But did not play at Michigan last year, so you know, ease in, play some special teams, get in the back into that rotation and get some snaps in September. His redshirt year is gone, so there's no limitations on playing him. So if you want to do the same thing we talked about with running back and keep your guys fresh, get six guys ready at that position. I'm not sure they have six guys ready at that position, but try and do what you can to get there.
I was a little surprised. I put on Owen's high school film, and I just looking at the two of them, I would not believe you said they were brothers, just looking at their body types and the difference in who they are as football players. But interesting to see, that dynamic that Ryan pointed out. I want to move on to Grayson McHugh, Ryan, another guy that you spoke to, an offensive lineman. This is somebody, Fitz, I think Fitz has been talking about Grayson McHugh lately as an in-state prospect to keep your eye on. So, Ryan, you spoke to him. What was your takeaway from that conversation?
Yeah, certainly a guy to keep an eye on. For sure. Legit 6'7", says he's up to 270 now. We had him around 250 something a couple months ago. So he's probably somewhere in the middle, 260, 265. But absolutely a guy that I think Penn State fans need to be keeping an eye on. I kept him off some of our early list for, the top remaining offensive lineman because I want to get some feedback on his season. I also heard he had an injury, and I was a little unclear on, maybe how that would impact him, but it doesn't seem to have a big impact on how Penn State views him. He's picking up some quality offers here lately. Just got Ole Miss last night, and I think it was eight new offers now over the past 3 weeks or so, which we see that in January, but that's a pretty good pool right there. But, he's a lifelong Penn State fan. I think anyone who saw my Twitter feed today, I put out a quote graphic about it. Just flat out admitted that he's been supporting Penn State since he can remember, and he has family members that went there. I believe he said his cousins go there, and I think he said his uncle even moved up to State College and goes to all the games. Believe it or not, he actually had never visited Penn State until November, which when he came up for the Ohio State game. But that's going to change here multiple times. I actually wouldn't be shocked if he came up for two spring practices to see what the schedule is. But because he's not playing basketball at the moment after getting surgery, his schedule is a little more open than what it normally would have been. So let's keep an eye on him for maybe two. I wouldn't be shocked if he came to a spring practice and then spring games or the blue-white game then. He did say Duke, Northwestern, Missouri are three schools he wants to visit. Academics are important, right? If you have Duke and Northwestern on there, that should tell you something. Also, one of his coaches has ties in Missouri, he said, so keep an eye on them as well. But he's certainly another tackle prospect that we need to have on the radar for Penn State fans. There's actually quite a few of them, and I think Trout's even handed out, four or five, like a handful of tackle offers here in recent weeks. I know Bryce Gilmore was another one down in Texas. He's talking about visiting for spring practice and has an official visit set as well. So he might be a guy we got to keep an eye on, but certainly with Grayson being an in-state player, LaSalle had a heck of a season this year. And obviously Penn State's watching Joey O'Brien a ton, right? So I'm sure they were watching Grayson during that period as well. He's a guy that, I would firmly have in, I don't want to say maybe the very, very top, let me clarify that. He is one of their top handful of offensive tackles that they're going to push really hard for here down the stretch. So
yeah,
another guy that I think makes a lot of sense to end up at Penn State, if I'm being honest.
6'6" and can move, Fitz.
6'7", get it right.
6'7". Sorry. 6'7" and can move. That's exactly the profile that Phil Trautwein has put out there for tackles so far.
Fitz, yes.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's what drew you to him in the first place. I imagine is just that he look a lot like the guys they've recruited recently in all of those metrics.
Right. Yeah. You look at Egan Boyer. You've got a really, really long guy that's going to take a couple of years to get where he needs to be. But when he gets there, certainly the potential is there. I'm not saying Grayson McHugh is that guy yet, but like he's got some potential. I think what Rivals gave him four stars. Like, yeah, he's got he's not really a secret anymore, Ryan. So fits the bill of what they're going for. And when you're looking at potential guys that can rise over the back half of their high school career instead of the front half, like McHugh fits the bill in terms of Pennsylvania offensive linemen.
For sure. Anything else you guys want to talk about here? We got OVs coming up here to the show.
I hope Grayson does some camps this year. I'd just really be curious to get some athletic metrics on him, whether it's Penn State or Under Armour. And by the way, Luke Waifel is another one that I'd be really curious to see if he camps. That was something I left out of his that conversation was, you know, his dad looked back on not sending Owen to camps and stuff like that. And that kind of changed their perspective on that stuff. So I know maybe that bores some fans, but for us, at least the three of us just talking, I'd really be curious to see if Luke Waifel does an Under Armour camp or something like that. Cause he looks like a pretty good athlete, but love to get some metrics.
Yeah. There's 6'6". You can't go wrong with that. His length, his frame, but you're right. There's some things you want to learn about maybe explosiveness or just raw speed, things like that, where it kind of fills in the details in what you want to know about a guy who could be, I mean, you look at that film and there's some fun stuff that he's able to do on the football field. I save this for last because it's happening in, you know, end of May and then June, and it might not be happening at all for some of these guys, but the official visit schedule feels like, okay, so it's February and it's a dead period, but there's always got to be something pushing the envelope further and further and further ahead in recruiting. Somebody's got to get an edge on somebody. So let's set up our official visits now. And then, you know, suddenly we have this news that everything that's happening in June is already scheduled by the end of February. A little hyperbole there, but you know, we've got a lot of news coming out recently, Ryan, of official visits that have been set up. What do you take away from this as far as interesting? Is it that it's a legitimate interest level in the program, or is it that they're going to take those visits and you are looking at like the when as well, stacking throughout the month, as we know that there is some meaning to when a guy is visiting if you have your preference of dates?
Yeah, there certainly is. I mean, just to give some background, like right now we have about 16 guys confirmed for official visits. Out of those 16, I wouldn't be shocked at all if three or four of them don't end up taking those official visits. For example, Caden Gephardt, we've talked about him a lot, kind of a tweener prospect between safety linebacker for the next level. I still firmly believe Caden Gephardt's going to commit somewhere in the spring. He has official visits set to Clemson, Penn State, and Ohio State, and maybe he ends up taking them, but you know, everything behind the scenes still points to him committing somewhere in the spring. I think Clemson is firmly in the mix there, a little bit more than I thought maybe a few weeks ago. Penn State still has a good shot, and, you know, I'm never going to rule out Ohio State for a guy who lives a half hour north of Columbus. I know he has a bunch of family and stuff that are Ohio State fans too. So what kind of pressure that has, I don't know, time will tell, but just he's
also
a good example.
Matt Patricia being the defensive coordinator is not on my bingo card for Ohio State. So I don't even know what that does to that side of the ball.
Chip Kelly leaving a head coaching job to become the offensive coordinator at Ohio State wasn't on the bingo card either. So
right.
Doesn't really surprise me when it comes to Ohio State. Obviously they're being aggressive there. And I think it's obvious that they're telling their coordinators that they're going to be limited in the amount of recruiting they have to do, just like Penn State does nowadays as well. So, but just again, with Gephardt, it's a good example of, you know, he's a guy that sure he has an official visit set right now, but I'd still be kind of surprised if he lasts that long. You know, you were talking about the timing of official visits as well, T. Frank, and what we can learn from that. I think Darius Gray is a really good example of looking at the date and then looking at the other schools and being able to figure out where Penn State stacks up. I say that because there are basically 4 weeks, 4 weekends starting May 30th. You know, the guys can take these official visits leading up to what we call the July dead period. It's also dead for a week or so in June. Out of those five schools that he announced as top five, Penn State's the one that got a midweek visit. Penn State, none of these schools really ever want guys to visit midweek. So that kind of tells me that Penn State was probably the fifth school to get the selection there. And, you know, they decided to squeeze it in a week before. Sean, you got something to say? Look like you had something to say. No,
okay, I agree.
Yeah. So that just tells me that, you know, he likely had his other four set up already. And, you know, Penn State was able to squeeze their way in there to try and stay in the race. But, you know, he'll go to Tennessee, LSU, South Carolina. Oh, Clemson's the first one. Clemson's the May 30th to June 1 weekend. So, again, that just kind of tells me that those four schools are likely ahead of where Penn State's at the moment. But as I said, we got 16 guys right now confirmed. Kari Adams was one of the most recent ones. He put that out there this week. We expect him to be in that second week of June. And, you know, right now that week is stacking up to be
that's the big heaviest one, right?
Well, yeah, that and June 13th and the 15th. Those two will be, you know, very heavy when it comes to Penn State's top prospects. You know, as far as the committed guys, by the way, we're expecting them to all be that first weekend, which is a little different.
Penn State usually isn't that normally at the end?
Usually the third. Yeah, the third. So, and another thing that to clarify with that is a good point, T. Frank. They really don't have too many guys, or maybe any, set up for that last weekend in June. One thing we've kind of noticed over the past is that the guys that they lock in for that last weekend are also kind of tend to be guys that maybe they still have some questions about, as far as maybe they want them to camp earlier in June, or they just have a handful of guys maybe a little bit higher on their board that they're going to bring in the weeks before. You know, as I said, right now we have nobody set for that final weekend. And then Penn State will also, you know, reserve that final weekend for guys later in the process to add. So, you know, say they have who's a good example, maybe a Peter Gonzalez, right, who came to camp last year or 2 years ago, was great. You know, he ended up taking an official visit, I think, that last weekend. I know definitely Broswell Thomas was a guy who came to camp last year, crushed it, and then they squeezed him in that final weekend. So just kind of looking at the dates and trying to figure out little ins and outs, I think those are a couple good tips for fans to watch as far as trying to figure out, you know, who ranks where and, you know, who their top guys are.
A guy that has come onto my radar recently fits from some of the stuff you've done with him is Keyshawn Lazor. What do you think of this particular recruitment? What do you think of this particular player?
It tells you how widespread the edge board is for Deion Barnes this cycle. There's a bunch in the region. We talked about Luke Waifel a little bit earlier. There's a bunch of guys. I think I have four of them on the big board, and Lazor wasn't even a passing thought. He is a guy that's been rising recently. Penn State offered last, I believe it was in January. Mm-hmm. So he's been rising recently. He's got some nice offers. He's got an Ohio State official visit as well. But yeah, you're looking at the appeal of playing edge at a place that has produced Abdul Carter, produced Chop Robinson, produced Arnold Ebikidi. I'm going to miss a couple of guys here, but Penn State's an attractive spot for edge prospects right now. They've got one in Daniel Jennings, but I think this is a situation where there's so many potentially out there that you want to get as many as you can in the barn. And Eliezer is a guy that you know, really wasn't on that radar, but you know, you look at Jackson Ford's in there, and you know Zion Ali, of course, you're going to get for an official visit. So there's so many options right now that I don't want to say it's going to be hard to screw this up, but they're going to get some pretty good players out on that edge.
That was going to be my next question is like, is this a potential chance to have an elite class of edge rushers and then D linemen overall? Because you mentioned the guys, I guess I'm just assessing the body of work here too, from Deion Barnes and what he's been able to do with a guy like Chaz Coleman. It feels like the potential for a run happening here if they're able to secure some of these guys. And I guess we're so early in the process. I'm just curious if that's what you have an eye towards as well.
I think there's going to be a ton of defensive ends that get official visits. You mentioned Waifel. Okay. Jackson Ford Jackson Samuels Ford has his set up. Ali, the guys, there's two of them down at Gonzaga, you know, and what is Reston Lehman at Peters Township? Like, there's so many guys out there that really fit the description, and then they're going to go out of the region and, you know, be appealing to some guys like Eliezer here. So, I'm definitely intrigued. What you said earlier about the defensive line, you know, I just definitely feel better about end than tackle right now, but tackle is about hitting on, like, there are some dudes that they're going after at tackle, but tackle is about hitting on those guys because everybody wants them. Haskell, Damari Simeon, Keyshawn Stansel, who set up an official visit from North Carolina. Like, those guys are the type of guys that, like, you're going to miss some defensive ends just because there's so many out there. You can't afford to miss as much at defensive tackle with what's out there. So, but there's still guys, like, don't get me wrong, there's still targets out there, but it's just a different balance when you're talking about those two positions.
Yeah, and that has been part of Penn State's, I don't want to say issue, but just the ongoing battle to get over the hump at that particular position, to continually get guys that are all of it at defensive tackle. And some of the things I've talked about from a philosophical perspective, when you have to make choices of size, strength, athleticism, sometimes you don't have to make those choices and everyone wants to be there, but you know, can they do that in this particular class with some of those guys? It'd be interesting to see.
But before we get on, like, my big board was 20 prospects. Ryan, how big could the big board have been? Like, we've had this argument all week.
50. I mean, so I'm working on a story. Hopefully I can do it tomorrow on kind of like, okay, these are the 20 guys, but let's not forget about these guys as well, you know, who are also, you know, all takes. And I think, Sean, we started with a list of 15 and now it's like 35 and I'm trying to narrow it down to 10. So it's just funny because we went from trying to get, I think, 15 to five or so. And then originally, you know, we're like, okay, maybe we do 10 and now we're, and then somehow the list expanded then to 35. And yeah, I'm really struggling with trying to figure it out.
They'll have 50 official visitors, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever that number may be. Like, so it makes sense. It's just a matter of, there's a lot of guys out there with a lot of interest, and it's really interesting, especially because you already got 9 commits. So you're a third of the way, probably what you're going to end up with in on signing day.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick with Keyshawn Lazor, dude, he's at 27 offers now. I think 18 of them came in January. So we were talking about, you know, Grayson McHugh having a good month of January. We talked about Kari Adams. Kari Adams is another one who, you know, picked up quite a few. But man, Lazor, over half of his offers have come in the last 4 weeks.
I mean, look at him. Impressive.
And look at waterfall. Some of that schools seeing that and they'll be like, I got to get in there. But when you're doing it in January, it's better than doing it before your junior year. You're like, there are guys that are going to peak at different times in the cycle.
Yeah.
You look at what Penn State brought in last year and you look at when those guys started to like move up in terms of rankings or were peaking at the end of the cycle. And a lot of these guys that were ended up in that class, or not a lot of these guys, but some of these guys that ended up in the class didn't have offers at this point, which is crazy to think about considering how accelerated everything is.
That was go ahead.
I was just gonna say another thing to keep an eye on, and Sean, you kind of hit on it there, but like, fans are trying to figure out, you know, if you pay attention to Twitter and you're really into recruiting, you know, looking at the guys who didn't pick up a bunch of offers, maybe got top guys that we were talking about, you know, in recent months, who then were stagnant in January, that should also tell you something about their junior season film. So that's what we're all really trying to sort through right now, is who are those risers, who are those guys who have dropped a little bit, and figuring out the new board.
That is what I wanted to end the show on. And Fitz, this is the conversation that I feel like is the problem, is people get stuck on names that they learn early in the process. And then like, that's it. And it has to be the person that you get in this class. Otherwise, when you don't get a fill in the blank, you know, then it's a problem. How do we talk about the names here, and I guess like I'm just pointing out a problem and I'm saying like, how do we fix this? But like, how do you teach fans to keep up like the names that need to know, the names that crop up later, to emphasize the value of those guys that as we get more information, guys move up the board?
You directly tell them that on the Blue White Illustrated message board. And that's something that we've been trying to hammer home, especially, I mean, the stars thing is crazy because On3 hasn't done anything with 2026s since October. So like, that's a long time for somebody's 87 ranking to be hanging out there when they look like a 4-star prospect. And it's fodder for people that want to, you know, shit on whatever, this receiver group in 2026 is really good.
Yeah.
And all of them are ranked 3-star. Well, I guess we have Jasir Rogers as a 4-star. So like, that's kind of where I'm at with that. And it's sort of like at the end of the rope here, if you couldn't tell, but like, go to the board, interact with Ryan and I. We will tell you what you need to know and what you need to understand about this fluid process, because it is crazy how much changes in the matter of months, or weeks even. So that's my pitch. Try us out. We've got a new promo coming where it's going to be $1 a week. I don't believe that's released yet, but it's a great deal this offseason. We do really, really good work during the season. I think we do our best work in the off season. So if you want to get your fill, get over to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, check it out, because you won't find better Penn State coverage anywhere.
Yeah, and that's it's the weekend, so the show here is over, and that's where the information is flowing, and that's where this conversation continues. Great pointing that out there, Fitz. Ryan, any last thoughts here on the show as we get to the end of it?
I just want to point out, I don't remember who we were discussing, but remember back in like October when I was like, I don't know, I think this guy's their top guy on the board, and Sean's like, shut up, because that's not going to be the case in February. And then, you know, I just felt like that was a funny thing we could bring up, because yeah, as much as I hate to say it, Sean's pretty good, and he's probably right. And I'm now not going to be on the pod for 2 weeks,
because that one came straight through the teeth for you. I appreciate that.
It did.
The best kind of compliments.
Coming up tomorrow over at BlueWhaleIllustrated.com, one of the best things to kind of play off of this is we have the Friday chat, which is where if you got a question about, hey, who XYZ, Fitz, Ryan, myself, Nate, Greg, we all answer questions there in the chat. But of course, like leader Fitz here is the guy who is championing the question answering over on the site. So we're done here now. We can't answer any of your questions on Friday here on the show, but we have that over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Made it to the end of the show. I am about to go crash because the caffeine has worn off. Maybe I'll do a Fitz. You're right. I don't have an off button. So I'm going to go do other things. We'll be back. The show does have an off button, and I got to hit it soon because we've been ending the show for about 3 minutes now. So we'll talk to you on Tuesday. Back to our normal schedule. We don't have any other press conferences coming up that we know about. So Tuesday, 10 a.m. BYI Live. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. For Ryan Schneider and Sean Fitz, we'll talk to you later.